which channels would be the most effective way to keep police accountable.
Okay, and we have to go to an NPR break shortly, but I'm going to just ask a few more questions on this during the NPR break, I want you to think about, military, because my dad was in the military, people in the military, they spend years and years, but then it's like, hey, I'm a cop. Am I getting behind the MRAP? Am I getting trained? So I just wanted to think about some of those things, but I'm going to head it back over to Joshua so he can lead us into this NPR break.
Yeah, and so great conversation here. We got emails, phone calls coming in. We're talking to Professor Ryan Welch about the 1033 program, which sells military equipment to local law enforcement agencies. You're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We are going to go to an NPR break here, and when we come back, we're going to continue this great conversation. Callers, please stay with us. We'll get to you in a few minutes. 813-239-9663. We'll be talking very soon.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. President Biden has been in the White House for a full month now, and NPR's Scott Detrow reports the new administration could take a big step toward passing its top legislative priority this week.
As the Senate focused on an impeachment trial in recent weeks, House committees drafted the line-by-line details of Biden's top legislative goal, a $1.9 trillion economic rescue plan. The measure will move through the House this week, beginning in committees tomorrow. It's a major step forward for Biden's proposal, even if the floor vote ultimately falls along hard party lines as expected. Biden has been stepping up his advocacy for the measure. Last week, he took his first two trips into the country as president to make his pitch, stumping for the proposal in both Wisconsin and Michigan. Scott Detrow, NPR News, Washington.
The southern United States getting some relief from the cold. Warmer temperatures began spreading across the region this weekend, but there are still lingering power outages, and the earlier extreme cold has left millions of Texans without clean water. Meanwhile, the power grid operator in Texas facing lawsuits. At least two have been filed against ERCOT, including one by the family of an 11-year-old boy who is believed to have died from hypothermia. Houston attorney Tony Busby is representing the family.
Well, people want answers. They want to know how this could possibly happen when Texas is supposed to the number one energy provider in the country. The
lawsuits claims ERCOT ignored repeated warnings of weaknesses in the state's power grid. In a statement released this weekend, ERCOT said it believes the right choices were made to avoid a statewide blackout. European foreign ministers expected to impose sanctions tomorrow on allies of the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, over the jailing of opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Navalny's chief of staff, Leonid Volkov, is making the case for sanctions, saying he believes Putin needs to be pressured.
At least a very clear sign should be sent, a very clear message should be sent to Kremlin that the time for compromises is over.
Navalny's allies have published a list of 35 people they believe should be sanctioned. In Myanmar, protesters gathered again today. Protesters in Yangon chanting slogans and singing songs as they return to the streets a day after security forces opened fire on protesters in Mandalay, killing two people. Big crowds are being reported in cities and towns across the country today. There have been more than 2 weeks of protests after the military seized power at the beginning of the month and detained elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Facebook, meanwhile, has shut down the military's main page for inciting violence. Israel has closed its Mediterranean beaches following an offshore oil spill, officials calling it one of the country's worst ecological disasters. The cause of the spill is yet to be determined. You're listening to NPR News. In Louisiana, authorities are investigating a shooting at a gun shop in the New Orleans suburb of Metairie this weekend. Three people were killed, including the gunman. Jefferson Parish Sheriff Joseph Lapinto says customers and staff returned fire after the gunman started firing his weapon inside the store.
It appears that several individuals ended up engaging that original suspect, whether inside the location or out here in the parking lot.
Lapinto says two other people were shot and wounded. They are reported to be in stable condition. Oklahoma City recently recorded 14 below zero, the coldest temperature for the city since 1899. But people weren't the only ones affected by the recent cold temperatures in the south. So was the region's bird population. Caitlin Howard is with member station KGOU.
Some species in Oklahoma that are in their northernmost winter range were not equipped to endure the extreme drop in temperatures. Double-crested cormorants were hit particularly hard. Dr. Kyle Abbott, a veterinarian at an Oklahoma wildlife rehabilitation facility, says he saw over 50 dead cormorants at a frozen lake in Oklahoma City.
They're designed to be insulated against cold water, but not this kind of sub-zero temperatures. And they're also a species that really relies on having a constant water source, both to maintain their hydration and so that they can fish.
Abbott says there's also been an influx of robins appearing in urban areas in search of food. For NPR News, I'm Caitlin Howard in Norman, Oklahoma.
And I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the ECMC Foundation, working to improve post-secondary educational outcomes for underserved students through evidence-based innovation. Learn more at ecmcfoundation.org.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man, how you doing? You good?
I know you like that.
Welcome back.
I know you like that.
All right, welcome back to the Urban Cafe on WNF 88.5. This is your host, Joshua. We got Jamal in the studio, our consigliere, and we got Professor Ryan Welch from University of Tampa talking about the 1033 program, which sells military equipment and other items to local law enforcement agencies. And so that's a big topic of conversation. We got a couple callers on hold. Before I get to the callers, I do have a couple emails here. So Ron in Lakeland, is a great show today. I know Dr. Welch on a personal basis, so thank you for this. May I suggest you attach your links to the news page on the WMNF website? So I, Ron, and for the rest of our listeners, I am going to reach out to our news director to see if we can go ahead and do that and add some of these great websites like the DLA.mil website, a link to the Washington Post article that initially brought me to this subject, and a link maybe to Professor Ryan's page at the University of Tampa where it has his bio. And then we have another one from David.
Yes, now this is interesting here. See, this is what I'm talking about. David, thanks for the email. He says back in 2011 at the Republican National Convention, he was protesting, and the cops brought out a LRAD, which looks like a long-range acoustic device.
Oh, wow.
Looks like something cops can speak in, and I've seen there's different things that can cause possible damage. And actually, I'm seeing the mayor of Portland previously had banned use of that after it was hit, I guess, used against some different protesters as well. So that's an interesting way to, that's just another, to track some of the...
And to put things in perspective, David also talks about there's a protest today happening at Gaslight Park in Tampa to protest the Ron DeSantis legislation, which is known as the anti-protest bill, which we talked about just a few weeks ago. We had three different state legislators on, and we had the Southern Poverty Law Center on, and we talked about this anti-protest bill. And so it kind of goes hand in hand with this militarization of the police conversation that we're having, right?
Right. And I would say, Dave, if there is any police... or better yet, police equipment you see today, which does not seem orthodox. If you can get a picture and let me know and email us so I can try to see exactly what it is. Because you can see on this spreadsheet what they got, what date, and how much it cost or the value of it. And then we can start analyzing, okay, you got this, and this was used. We see it at this time. Why was this used? And then we could start going to town halls and start figuring out the use of some of this equipment.
Yeah. And so, Professor Welch, just getting back here. So, we're relatively young, but back on February 28th, 1997, there was a famous shootout in Los Angeles known as the North Hollywood Shootout, where two heavily armored bank robbers went in to rob a bank, and then they ultimately started. They were equipped in all sorts of military paraphernalia, and they basically they killed 12 police officers, and 8 civilians were injured, and over 2,000 rounds of ammunition fired by robbers and police. And essentially what I recall from that, there was a documentary, a made-for-TV movie about this. And do you remember this incident, Professor Welch?
I don't remember it personally, but I have read about it.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
So
what I was getting at there is one of the things that stood out to me the most was that the Los Angeles Police Department, which I think was like the second largest police department in the country at the time, was ill-equipped to manage these two robbers who had basically military equipment with them, essentially. And so it's kind of around the time that this program kicked off, correct? Yeah, 1997. I think that's very interesting. So for our listeners out there, take a look at the North Hollywood shootout. Just search for it. And that happened in 97. And in 97 is when the 1033 program came into existence. So it's fascinating correlation. Go ahead, Professor.
Can I make a comment about that, actually? I think it's quite interesting. I mean, this is one example that you hear about why you might want police officers to have some of this equipment, right? Like, you don't want to find police officers out on the street being outgunned by the quote unquote bad guys, right? And that's one of the examples. Also, sometimes maybe the University of Texas Tower shooting, in which an ex-Marine basically bunkered himself up at the top of a tower and started picking people off on a University of Texas campus with a rifle in the 60s. And the police found themselves ill-equipped to manage that. And, you know, to the extent that someone wants to make that argument, it seems at least reasonable on the face of it. I think one thing to think about, and Malcolm Radley has written about this, a journalist, is when departments get this equipment, what do they do with it? And so it's been documented by Ralco and by him and others, that what ends up happening is the department realize that they might need to train on these things. And so what did they do in the 1990s and the early 2000s? They would go into neighborhoods in SWAT gear and start serving drug arrest warrants. And so all of a sudden, instead of knocking on the door and serving a warrant, you have what looks like a militarized force rolling up, and you can imagine what kind of responses people have to that. And so it leaks into everyday policing. So it seems reasonable on the face of it to say you don't want the police to be outmanned or outgunned. But it's worth thinking about how that leaks into everyday policing and how that might have ill effects on certain communities and on outcomes such as mistaken drug raids, people getting killed on accident, people firing back on the police, or, you know, all types of things. So I think it's worth mentioning that.
No, thank you so much, Professor. Appreciate that. And so again, we're talking to Professor Ryan Welch about the 1033 program. We got some callers who've been patiently waiting. Let's get to a caller. Again, callers, let's keep our comments brief and our questions on point. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling us from? Oh, that caller hung up, unfortunately. Let me get to another caller. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling us from?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay.
Good morning.
My name is Mike. Good morning. My name is Michael, and I was listening to your radio station. And I you're talking a lot about how the police get this military equipment. I was in a reserve unit in the 90s, and we would often draw out more supplies than we needed for food and stuff. And if we didn't use it, we gave it to the local shelter because you can't return it. And if you don't use your allotment, you won't have your allotment for next year. That's always been a problem with me and the government.
Interesting. Okay.
Use it, lose it. And as far as having an armored vehicle, you can use an armored vehicle for a lot more things than what an armored vehicle by name looks like it should be used for. We live in a hurricane zone here, and water rescue, high water rescue, using it for helping people. Not so much, going in and knocking over a building, but...
So like natural disasters type...
Natural disasters. When I was a kid, I was in a Boy Scout troop, and back in the 80s, the Boy Scouts worked with the Rangers, which there was a group of Boy Scouts named Rangers, worked with the Rangers and worked with the police department, because you had police Rangers, fire Rangers, Army Rangers, that you would go on and you go train with. And it provided a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? A lot more response to your community.
Okay.
We were training to go and help people in our community. Okay. Not, you know, rough them up or anything. It was just actually helping people out in the community. If you were a fire ranger, then you would take and probably start your career or try to get a career in the fire department. Okay. And that was a lot of community response. And I don't see it as such a bad thing. And as far as those, you know, 120 sites in Polk County, I never understand why people don't want you to be able to use your weapon correctly to hit a target. At the same time, they said, well, they could have shot him in the leg. Okay? And I'm like, they could have if you go to the range enough and you have accurate equipment. If you're going to carry it, you need to train with it.
Yeah, and I can see that argument for sure. I agree with that even.
So, and I appreciate you letting me have this little platform.
Of course.
I'm sorry I'm stuttering. It's just, some of it is a passionate subject, and I listen to you, and I'm almost there sometimes, and sometimes it sounds like there's more fear in something. A vehicle never scares me.
Okay.
Now, the use of the vehicle... If you're going to go serving a warrant and you're going to pull in with a heavy SWAT team, two things are going to happen. Either it's going to be so overwhelming where the person is not going to resist at all, or they're going to try to go out in a blaze of glory. Okay,
which happened a couple of weeks ago, right? When a local police officer was killed, right?
Oh, by the way, you mentioned about the shooting in the 80s in California.
Yeah, 97, actually.
97, I remember that.
Yeah, and that was crazy, wasn't it?
It was crazy, but what was really crazy about it, everyone says they had military equipment, which they had military equipment. They had better than military equipment. Mm-hmm. Okay? As long as it was in the Army, I never had that much bullet-resistant equipment.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? And they were covered from head to toe. Mm-hmm. The cops had to go to a pawn shop to get rifles.
Yeah.
Because their rifles weren't effective enough.
Yeah.
And part of the reason the rifle wasn't effective enough is they used subsonic ammunition to cut down collateral damage.
Mm.
They don't want things going through. And so, and they didn't have any other choice. So,
okay.
I mean, they were using hunting rifles to try to stop them.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your call this morning.
Okay, you're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Take care. Yeah. And so, again, that was a reference to the North Hollywood shootout that I made earlier. Go ahead, Jamal.
Yeah, I wanted to reference that. Thank you very much for the call, Michael, and in your service. I believe you said you were in the reserves. My thing with the North Hollywood shootout, I guess, would be example. I mean, these guys had guns that you see on the video games. They had an HK-91. They had Noriko, yeah, AK-47 variants. My question, and Professor possibly could chime in on this, would be, okay, so the police typically have a 98 stand, I'm sorry, 9mm standard issue, or they have maybe shot. There's no way if you have criminals or these bank robbers in the Hollywood, if they're going to come with these types of guns, there's no way to man a regular police patrolman to, hey, be prepared mm-hmm. for these two or three AKs they're going to have. Because, mm-hmm. example, this shooting, for example, it says the police fired 650 rounds. There may have been, maybe 10, 15 officers around shooting. But these guys, they say, fired about 1,100 rounds.
Yeah.
So there's no, I mean, if Tampa police, you know, there's just a regular patrol. There's no way to have every patrolman prepared for this.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't want to get caught on the North Hollywood shootout, right. Even though I know I was the one who mentioned right. it. But let's get back to the 1033 program. We got about 10 minutes left in the show. We got a couple callers left. Professor, question for you. So regarding statistics, in all your investigation and your research and your publications, what are some of the stats that have stood out the most to you regarding this program?
Yeah, thanks. So the one that I mentioned earlier from our first paper, in which people, just places that receive this equipment, more people end up dead. To me, that's pretty profound. Human life is important, and pet life is important. And again, it was correlation in these models, but we're starting to see that correlation play out time and time again. Other people have done this study in different ways, and that keeps happening. And so to me, that's something that stands out. We've done some research that is under review right now, not published yet, hopefully to be published soon, looking at police officers and how they feel about the program. I think there's some really interesting statistics there that's worth mentioning that presents a really nuanced story. So we were only able to, this is a survey that we did with one police department, and they shall remain nameless, just so that, because we said that that would be the case. But what we can glean is some information from that, and that is, generally speaking, the police officers seem very, very supportive of the program. If you just ask them about the 1033 program, you told them what it was, just in case, and you asked them what it was. But then if you start to ask them specifically, do you support receiving weapons? Do you support receiving military vehicles? Things get a little less clear. On a scale of 1 to 10, the officers that we surveyed were like almost a 9 on average supporting this program. But about 50% or so supported receiving weapons. Around 60%. About 40 to 50% supported receiving these types of vehicles. So these officers are intuiting some things about this program. We know that it makes civilians less safe. There's also research that shows that it makes police officers less safe, and they may be intuiting some of that. And so I think it's worth mentioning that it's not a very easy story to try to unpack, and there's a lot of interesting variation there. One thing, and that goes for ammo as well, we asked a lot of different demographics and other variables, like how safe do you feel? Does that impact how much you want to receive equipment from the program? And it doesn't. The one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, and this may open a larger can of worms, and then maybe you will have me back on, as you said, but over and over again, when officers are white and when officers display some racial animus towards non-whites, they're more supportive of the program. And that's an interesting finding that happens over and over again, no matter how we model this. And so The question then is why? What we did was run a machine learning statistical model, fancy stuff to look, and we found that finding, but it doesn't tell us why. And so there needs to be some follow-up on some of that.
Wow, that's fascinating. And that goes down to, what our first caller of the day said, the storming of the Capitol by a largely predominant white crowd, was not met with the same, force that, if it was a crowd of predominantly colored folks would have probably been met with, And so, yeah, I think there's definitely some underlying issues there, but.
I mean, look, if they can send a SWAT team in to serve Breonna Taylor, I mean, I don't think I didn't see one SWAT person out there at the Capitol.
Mm-hmm. And so we do, we're coming up towards the end of the show, but let me get to a few callers, Professor, here that we have. And again, we have a great guest here, Professor Ryan Welch from University of Tampa, who is a subject matter expert on the 1033 program. He is an assistant professor in political science and international studies at University of Tampa. Let's get to this caller who's been patiently waiting. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling us from?
Yeah, I think you're missing the main point here. Okay, one of the big points here.
All right, Billy, we do need to keep it short.
Where does this equipment, how is this equipment made available? Now, let me tell you something. As a professor found that any school system needed a couple of thousand iPads, do people get killed there? If a school system like Hillsborough County would want school buses to transport children, would they have that type of stuff there? So we're really talking about the overproduction of military equipment, which is then made available to the civilian population. And that's what concerns me, and that if you really wanted to keep down crime, then we would have more books in the school. Then we would talk about iPads, a Wi-Fi system. And
I get that, Billy, but that's not the conversation today. You know, the reappropriation of budget for that.
Do the comparative analysis here and look at this board.
But that's not the professor's area of expertise. His area of expertise is specifically objected to the program.
Question. The professor's a good man. He can expound upon that. He's a professor. He teaches people.
Professor, what are your thoughts?
First, I'd like to say, Billy, thank you for thinking that I'm a good man. That is meaningful. He brings up a good point. And so we're talking about how this military equipment affects officers' decision-making and the outcomes with respect to use of force. But there's other, but what happens before we get there? I think that's his point, right? In society, how do we allocate resources such that we can avoid the situation where we have this happening? Will that make it all go away? No. Will it lower the probability that we see these types of things? Almost certainly. And I think that's a conversation worth having. And people that study policy and study budget allocation certainly are probably having this conversation in their literatures.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Billy, for calling in. Okay, so let's get don't really have time for another caller. We do apologize. You're just coming up here short. I wish we had the 2 hours like we used to when we first started the show, because this is definitely a topic worth 2 hours or more of our time today. But we are talking to Professor Ryan Welch. Professor Welch, so to kind of wrap up the conversation for our listeners out there, what are the biggest points that you would like to get across here this morning?
Yeah, thanks for asking that, actually. So for me, as someone who's been looking into this more and more, you know, we started off this conversation by saying, is it good or bad? And oftentimes, as I told you, Joshua, off the air, I oftentimes avoid normative questions in my research and look at what is or isn't. But what I can tell you is some of the things that we know and what we don't know, and then people can draw their conclusions as they see fit. We do know that increased militarization through the 1033 program mostly increases police killing of other people, of their pets. It decreases the safety for police officers. It doesn't actually decrease crime, probably. It may, but it probably doesn't. There's some mixed evidence, but the best studies are showing that it doesn't. And it causes social fragmentation. It does create a situation in which people trust the police less often, which makes it harder for them to do their jobs. And so from what we know right now, those are the outcomes associated with this program. As more and more information and more good research gets done, maybe we'll know more and we can counterbalance some of that. But those are the outcomes we know, and you can draw your conclusions as to whether that's quote unquote good or bad.
That's a absolutely fantastic summary there. And when is your next publication going to come out? Do you know?
I'm not sure. We have one under review right now that's looking like it may be relative. I have one that should be out any day now, but it has not anything much to do with this. And then the next one that has to do with the police survey that I told you about, hopefully should be out in the next, I would guess, 1 to 2 months. Like I said, the academic market or writing goes slowly sometimes.
Yeah. Is that the peer review process?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, I figured as much. Yeah. And so just an absolutely great conversation. Professor, I would love to have you on again to talk about, I see you're an expert in dissent and repression, international human rights. I would love to talk about the whole situation in Myanmar on this show one day with you. So we can, that's a topic for another time. But I just want to thank you so much for your time this morning. Jamal, you want to say anything to the professor?
Yeah, Professor, thank you very much for coming on. We'd love to have you back. And just to everyone out there in Radio Land, if you see anything that looks like Call of Duty or anything normal, try to figure out what that equipment or weapon is going.
Send the picture to dj@wmnf.org. And so with that being said, we're going to head out. Thank you again, Professor, for your time this morning. Absolute wonderful
Thank
conversation.
You so much. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I appreciate talking with both of you and all of your listeners.
Excellent, excellent. And for our listeners out there, thank you so much for tuning in this morning to the Urban Cafe. This is your host, Joshua, Jamal the Consiglieri, Professor Welch. We're out. We're going to lead on to the Sunday Forum with Walter, Alvaro, and the crew. And I'm going to put some U-Roy on to lead us out. Rest in peace, U-Roy.
About this musical disc coming your way.